Catherine.
Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. For those who are here to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, so the Simple Actions Group would like to say welcome to everyone who's here tonight. Thank you for coming. This church is non-smoking. Our group is welcome to be in this room and in the bathrooms or outside the foyer of the small flight of stairs. Otherwise, please, I'm just in this room of church. At this time, please make sure your cell phones are on silent, and everyone present, please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. We have two wonderful guests with us here tonight, and hopefully everyone will enjoy hearing them. This group does practice the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a clear set of directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism. And these directions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting here tonight to carry this clear message and to focus on how to recover from the illness of alcoholism. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. All right, the format of our meeting is an open big book meeting, step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions from the speakers or other people here tonight after the meeting pertaining to the stuff that we're on tonight, which tonight is the second half of the two first. So step 12 is kind of broken up into two meetings, so tonight we're on the second half of step 12, which that means, woo, next week, supper and speaker. So what I'd like to do is give our two guest speakers tonight a warm welcome. So. We have Eric, who traveled down from Richmond to be here with us, and Graham, who traveled all the way from Southern Chesapeake. So. All right, so tonight we're starting, we're kind of in the back of the big book, we'll be step 12. We'll be on page 96, and just a reminder, step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So, on page 96, we're at suppose you are on. Suppose you are now making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell the story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else.
Towards me?
Go for it.
Okay. I'm Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
I'm glad to be here and glad to be sober tonight. So this is talking about step 12 and, you know, working with new guys and stuff like that. So the way this was all set up was that we've already met the guy. And see, when I came to AA, what I thought was that as a result of coming to AA, I would probably not drink and I would become good. That was really what I thought would happen to me. I would be able to not drink, and they would teach me how to be a good guy, the good guy that I'd always wanted to be. And then I would make lots of money and probably meet her and just be blissfully happy and maybe not really have much to do with AA. That was kind of my plan, I think, something along those lines. I just needed it to be figured out. Fortunately, what happened to me was that the guy that took me through the 12 steps had read the book and knew what he was doing. And he realized that my problem was never actually drinking. My problem was actually me stone cold sober. My problem is really me sober. I don't like being sober. I've never liked it. I don't like any of you. I don't have a great opinion of myself. And alcohol and some drugs, if you've got them, baby, made that feel a lot better. So I didn't realize any of that when I came to AA. I thought that this was going to be about not drinking, and to some extent that is correct. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that the guy took me through the steps the best he knew how at that time, and he was really getting me ready to do the thing that's actually going to save my life. And that is step 12. It's getting out of myself by helping other people. You see, I'm so involved with me and how I feel. It's really all I ever think about. Every conversation I have starts with the word I and goes downhill from there. And I really suffer from self-obsession to this day. I've been sober since 97, and I still suffer from self-obsession to this day. So I like AA at first because I think, you know, this is like it's like one of those self-help books. I don't know how old all you guys are, but in the 90s there was a lot of self-help books. You can still, if you ever go to one of those things called a bookshop, there's a section in there and it says self-help. You need to watch that. There's no cool people can see you going over there. You need to be careful. You don't want anybody that looks interesting to see you in the self-help section. But anyway, you know, I kind of thought this was like that, that there would be some kind of magic spell in this book and the other books, and I'm really smart, so if I could just read all those books, I could figure out what I needed to do to get mine. And the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is it's set up for exactly people like that, people like me. And he took me through the steps, and all the steps were leading up to this point. And the point I'm trying to make is the first 11 steps, it's not really about me getting anything. It's about getting me ready to do the thing that's going to save my life. And this is where the juice is in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, maybe we'll talk about it a bit later. I've been through some wonderful times in sobriety, and I've been through some terrible times in sobriety. I'll go toe-to-toe with anybody in this room for big deal problems right now, right here. Come on, I'll go toe-to-toe. I've got bigger deal problems or just as big as anybody in this room. Just try me. Bring it. Okay? And what's got me through that more than anything is putting that to the side, my big deal problems, and calling the new guy back and saying, how are you doing today? And meeting with the new guy at Starbucks and sitting down and saying, okay, I think we're on step 3. Let's read. Did you read that thing we talked about? That's what this is about. That this is a design for living that works in rough going. So by this time in the book, I'm supposed to have already met the guy one time. And the main thing I'm supposed to have done is establish, is he actually an alcoholic? And that's very important, because my time is precious. I am a big deal, and I don't want to waste my big deal time on a little deal that's not an alcoholic. Okay? I need a little deal that is an alcoholic. So I need to establish that. So now it's talking about meeting the guy again, and he's willing to do the steps. So as far as sponsoring people goes, one of the guys I sponsor had a first anniversary recently. And I was thinking, you know, in that year since I've known that guy, his name's Shane, how many other guys have I tried to help? They've asked me to be their sponsor and I've tried to work with them. And it must be, and this is not to brag, this is to make a point, it must be in the double digits at least. And none of those other guys I don't think are going to AA anymore or they're sober. So it really is a process of setting it up so that the guy knows what we're asking him to do, and then seeing if he's going to do it. That's really what this is, and it's nothing personal, right? It's just delivering the pizza, and we only have pepperoni. I'm sorry if you don't like it, but that's what we do, and there it is. And if you don't want to eat it, that's fine too. Have a nice day. Because the thing that keeps me straight and the thing that helps me to stay sober is the act of delivering the pizza. It's really got nothing to do with what he does with it. So I'm clear on that. Sometimes I still get confused, but when I do get confused about that and I start trying to save people, I can call guys like Eric and they'll set me straight.
My name is Eric. I'm an alcoholic.
Eric.
My sobriety date is January 20th of 2000, and I have a home group in Richmond. It's the Outlaw Safecracker group. We meet on Mondays and Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And I have a sponsor. I've had a couple sponsors in AA. My first sponsor that makes me think of this, I've been watching him for maybe a week or two, and I asked him if he would be my sponsor. And he asked me some questions. He pulled me off to the side. He said, let me ask you a couple questions. And the first thing he asked me was, do you want to stay sober? And I thought that was a little bizarre. You know, I was like, you know, of course I want to stay sober. I've asked people that question before, and you get a lot of different answers. You just do. You get a lot of different answers when you ask somebody that question. So he was trying to figure out what I was trying to accomplish. He asked me if I would follow his directions. And he asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. And then he gave me his phone number. He told me to call him the next day at a certain time. And I called him. And then I don't know exactly how long after that we started talking, but we started to meet one-on-one a little bit. And so we saw each other a couple times before we really sat down and started doing anything here. But he really wanted to make sure I wanted to stay sober. I mean, he sponsored a lot of guys. You know, I'm sure he still sponsors a lot of people. And he just didn't want to mess around. You know, he just had a lot of things going on. But I asked that question today if somebody talks to me about sponsorship. And when I meet new people in AA, it's almost like I have to make sure that they're alcoholic. I mean, it seems like I got to go through a whole process because I find there's a lot of people that are like, nah, I'm just a drug addict. You know, and maybe that's just in Richmond where just some of the meetings I go to are primarily just from a treatment center or something. But it is almost like I got to go on a treasure hunt to find a real alcoholic a lot of times. And I don't know what's going on with that. But I make sure, because I suffer from alcoholism. I mean, I'm just a daily bedwetting, blackout, drunk, nothing fancy. You know, just your basic slob type drinking is what I like to do. And that's what I have experience with. And I need to find folks that have that cannot seem to stop when they should stop. And don't have any desire to stop when, you know, they should want to stop. So I ask a lot of questions, and I do a similar thing. I mean, I ask the questions that my sponsors have asked me, and then we meet. And we'll sit down, and we'll have, you know, a meal, or we'll talk, you know, and I'll talk to them about what has been going on in my life and what I was like drinking. And they'll talk to me about what's going on with them. And if they, you know, I ask them, I don't really ask so much, but I talk to them about what I expect in sponsorship, you know, and these are the things I've been shown how to do. These are the things I'm going to ask you to do. Think about it. Call me tomorrow and let me know what you think about that. And if they call and they want to, you know, get on board and do what I do and do what the other guys I sponsor do, I feel like they've made a decision at that point. You know, they made a decision to do something other than what they've been doing, other than whatever it is they've been doing that's gotten them in this position to begin with. So that's my experience.
Thanks, Eric.
Yep.
Thank you, Terry.
All right, moving along on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that's a question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon people
ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he could get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house.
Yeah, so my experience with this on a personal level is that I just love to give importance to what's going on in my mind and the situations in my life. Really, my problem seems to be I'm a very conceited person and I want to run the show. That's my basic problem. I'm very full of myself. I'm arrogant. Definitely the smartest cat in this room. And I really, really have struggled with that my whole life, and my default seems to be running the show. That's just what I go back to over and over again. I'm so used to it, I don't even know I'm doing it a lot of the time until it starts to go really wrong, and then I'm like, oh, I must be running the show because this is really weirder than usual, you know? So, but it says here specifically about talking to the new guy, and I remember having a guy come and... you know, he was a homeless guy, and I met him at a meeting, and I let him come and stay in my house, and I gave him some money, and I loved going to the meeting with him, and everybody seeing that I had taken this homeless alcoholic in, and I was helping him. I wasn't so happy when I made dinner one night after I'd been out working all day. He was in my house. I came out, he'd eaten all the dinner, and he didn't want to get a job, apparently, so eventually I had to throw him out of my house. I'm now very resentful at the guy. And then I saw him at a meeting a few weeks later with a hat on that my aunt had given me for Christmas. So, you know, there was a lesson in all of that. The resentment that I felt around that really burned this into me. It's not the matter of giving that's in question, but when and how to give. And if I make it so the guy's going to rely on me, really what I'm doing is I'm playing God again. I'm running the show again. And that's my favorite thing to do because it feeds my ego and it makes me feel like the big deal. And that's really to be avoided today. I really, if I'm doing that, what it actually says is that I'm actually harming the guy. So if I start to become like the social services for this guy, and I'm giving him money, and I'm giving him rides, and I'm putting a lot more work into his recovery than he is, then we're in trouble. And what I'm actually doing is I'm enabling him now, and I'm enabling him to be insincere, to lie to me. Because he doesn't really want to do it. Now he's not just doing the steps because he feels he needs to do the steps. Now he's doing the steps because he's living in my house and he thinks if he doesn't do them, I'll kick him out. Or he wants another $20 to spend on crack tomorrow or whatever it is. So, you know, it's very... I went through those experiences, I think from a good place inside me, but I went through those experiences to try and help people, but it was wrong. You know, and I learned from that, from the pain of doing that. And then, you know, what it really talks about in here for me is it talks about the importance of having a relationship with God. And that's a sticky wicket for someone like me who was an atheist when I came to AA. But the longer I've been sober, the more and more convinced I am that this is absolutely... The power is not in these meetings. You can go to you can hide out in AA and go to 200 meetings a week if you want. Good on you. Good times. I've done it. But that's not even where the power is. The power is in this relationship with God. And that's why I have to do the steps. And in particular, once I've done the first 9 steps, step 11, I have to discipline myself to do that on a daily basis. So what it's saying to me is that the guy, just like me and just like anybody in here that's been sober for any time, I had to come here and take care of business. I had to do AA. I had to take the actions. And nobody could do it for me. I was convinced, like Eric said, because alcohol beat me up so bad, so many times, that I was done and I wanted to die. And I didn't. There was no other way that I could do this, it seems. And that's the state I was in when I wound up at AA. And at first I depended on AA, that was a power greater than me. And over time that's changed. I do believe in God now. And, you know, that's up to me, whatever. But the bottom line is it's important that I realise that that's where my dependence is. And it's important for me not to let the new guy depend on me. So I always encourage the new guy to have a group experience, to get lots of guys' numbers, to talk to lots of guys. I always encourage a kind of a group. The group can help the person through, because I'm fallible and flawed like everybody else, and I might let the guy down, you know. So I want to make sure that that's covered, but it's very important. And the way I burn the idea into every man that he can get well regardless of anyone, just like Eric was saying, there's a list of simple actions. Well, they used to be called simple actions, but now in Chesapeake we call them sober actions. Anyway, there's a list of sober actions that we all take, that mainstream AA. And it's not rocket science. It's not complicated. That's why they call it simple, right? It's just a simple list of five or six things that people who want to stay sober do regularly. And really, I put the responsibility on the new guy. If you want to do this, this is what we're doing. And again, this is the only flavor we've got. We're not going to change what we are doing because you don't have a job. We're not going to change what we do because your wife won't let you sleep in the big bed. We're not going to change what we do because you're whinging about how much your life sucks. I'm sure it does suck. You were drunk yesterday. Okay, I understand, because that was what it was like for me too. But what we're not going to let that change what we do here. This is what we do, and this is a simple program of action. And you're free to take the action and change, or not take the action and not change. It's your choice. And that's the wonderful thing about AA. We're not selling anything to anybody. You know, here it is. If you want it, do it. If you don't want it, we'll still be here doing it if you manage to crawl back in here.
I was given a lot of simple, sober actions to take when I got here. I was told to take a shower. I was told to brush my teeth. I was told to, not wear my hat. I was told to show up on time. You know, I was told to be here, go to a meeting every day, make a phone call. You know, I was told a lot of things that I would not have known that I should be doing or would want to do in order to recover from what was happening to me. You know, and I guess I could have not done it. I just didn't have anything better to do. And it seemed like the things he was telling me to do, some of them made sense, but a lot of them didn't. I mean, he was like, you need to shake the speaker's hand. You need to sit as close to the speaker as possible. You need to, and I was like, God, I mean, what the hell does this have to do with anything? I don't understand, you know? And I just, you know, every time I would start to argue with my sponsor about some simple action to take, he would say, you're just not done drinking yet. And I would just be like, ugh, I am, you know? But in reality, he's correct. I mean, and it's been the truth today with anybody I've ever worked with, that if you are arguing with me about what I'm asking you to do or something I've done that's worked for me, you're just not powerless. You know, it's a first step problem. I don't think I have to do what you're doing to stay sober. Maybe I'm slightly elevated. Maybe I'm just a little, you know, not quite the same as you. And I didn't understand what he meant at that, you know, by that, but I do now. And so there were a couple times. Well, when I first started sponsoring people for a long period of time, you know, the things I might ask somebody to do, or I would share experience with somebody, you know, if they didn't do it or whatever, if they just decided not to, I would make it about me, you know. And so it was like, you know, and I had a fit about something, you know, and I was resentful. I'm like, he won't do this, and blah, 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 I can't understand, blah, blah. You know, I was just making it about myself, and I'm putting my own work on, you know, on a service plane, you know, like Graham said, playing God, really. And it has nothing to do with that. It's really, you know, take myself out of the equation. There are things that I've been shown how to do and told to do or suggested to do, however you want to look at it, that have worked really good, provided that I decide to go do them, you know. And being self-supporting through my own contributions has taken a long time, but it has been pointed out to me along the way. I had to stop borrowing money from people. I had to stop trying to make my mom feel guilty about whatever self-imposed crisis I had at that moment, you know, and tell her some sob story about something, and then she's writing me a check, you know. That doesn't work in sobriety. I mean, there's a shelf life for how long that's going to work, I can tell you that. And so that was wearing me out. So those things stopped happening, you know, and I started putting money in the basket all the time, making sure I'm putting money in the basket. You know, I see guys that I sponsor that maybe they just forget to go to the bank machine, or maybe they're just, you know, they'd rather smoke than put money in, and it's important. I mean, it seems like the more I put in here, the better everything seems to work out. It's just been my experience. I remember one time I was running, down Patterson Avenue in Richmond, and I'd been running this route every day for like a week or something. I was at some kind of goal or something silly, and goals aren't silly, but this was kind of silly. So anyway, but I'd seen this homeless guy on the side of the road, and I was like, every day I'd see the same guy out there with a sign, the whole deal, and I'd run by him, and I could just smell him from 20 feet away, you know. And then I started stopping and just talking to him. His name was Brian. He's from Boston. Real heavy ca accent. I mean, big, just huge Boston guy. And one day he was kind of like passed out sort of under the magnolia tree, you know. And I started talking to him. I was like, man, I'm going to get this guy sober. And boy, I just, you know, I'm just like, I am going to be, I'm going to come in like Superman. I'm going to get Brian hooked up. We're going to get him right, you know. So I said, hey, Brian, you know, if you ever decide that you want to do this, you know, I'm going to be running back out here tomorrow because I'm running out here every day. You know, think about it. So the next day, there's Brian looking even worse. He's like, yeah, I want to do something about this, man. So I'm like, I got 5 miles to sprint home. So I sprint home, you know, and I'm booking. And I call a guy I sponsor. I'm like, we're going to get Brian, you know. And so we drive over. We pick up Brian, drive him over to the, you know, the shelter, get him all situated in there. You know, Brian goes into some kind of massive detox convulsion type deal, you know, which is kind of to be expected. And I stopped back by a couple days later with, you know, shaving supplies. It was like all my you know, extra clothes, you know, so it's like this whole J. Crew collection for Brian. And I'm like, man, you know, he's really going to appreciate this. Clean clothes, man. You know, got all shaven. And, you know, so like 4 or 5 days go by. I go back over to see Brian, see if he's like conscious. And I get there and he doesn't even recognize me. You know, I'm just like, oh, God, you know. But he kind of does, you know, and he's like, you know, trying to figure things out. And anyway, go back by maybe the 6th or 7th day, Brian's gone. You know, I'm like, God, what happened to Brian? You know, I guess Brian checked himself out. Running down Patterson, there's Brian looking like he should be in a J. Crew commercial. You know? Looking sharp, sharpest dressed guy in the corner, right? I'm like, what happened? You know, he's just like, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it, you know. And so I made a lot of that about myself, you know, and my power or whatever. And it's just not up to me. You know, we're responsible for the effort. You hear it all the time, not necessarily the outcome. And it's important that I do whatever it is that I'm asked to do in AA. And if somebody is an alcoholic and they have alcoholism and they're the hopeless variety and they drink like I drink, whatever, they drink like we drink, you know, I need to be helpful to them, you know. And I've had other guys that I've worked with that might need a little money here or there because they don't have any money to call or whatever. It's fine, you know, help them out. And there's a part in the book that talks about, you know, if they're really one of us, rarely are they really going to want, you know, to take from you. It's funny because a lot of guys will ask for some money to call. They're like, all right, I'm writing this down. I'm going to pay you back. And they do. I lent some money to get a guy to get a car one time. And it wasn't a lot, but it just was what it was. And, he, you know, he drank it all up or whatever. But, I mean, like 8 months later, he called me to apologize and paid it back out of the blue. And I was just like, damn. Kirk, you are a drunk. You know, you are. It's been riding your conscience, hasn't it, man? You know, so I just, everybody gets to feel their way around with this kind of stuff. I think I'd rather err on the side of everything I've just talked about, making it about me, whatever. I have no other option. I just have to kind of go through it. If I have a sponsor and I'm being honest with my sponsor about what I'm doing and who I'm trying to do it with, then this stuff tends to sort itself out.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, we're saying on page 98, now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put these principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persistent and for a few months, The effect on man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis on which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
Yeah, so my experience with this is there's really two ways this usually goes. And the first way is I can think of some guys that I've sponsored over the years, and their wife forgave them. And the guy did the steps, and the wife may or may not have been involved in Al-Anon or church or whatever, but somehow she was able to find it within herself to forgive the guy, and basically they moved on. After some hiccups, you know, round about the amends, it's always a bit iffy round there, especially if he's been running around. But anyway, you know, they were able to get through it, and the family moved on, and it was nice. I was in Richmond the other day, and I met this lady. She's the spouse of a guy that I sponsored 5 or 6 years ago. He's still sober, and she was really happy to see me, and I was happy to see her, and he's doing great, and their life's completely transformed as a result of AA, and that lady forgave him. She let it go, and their whole family's moved on, and that was a wonderful thing to see. It's not always like that. And the other extreme that I see is, and you know, this could just as well be a male spouse, but I don't sponsor women, so I only see guys, and they're usually married to women, and the woman will not let go of the past. She will not let it go, and she keeps bringing the past out at every opportunity and throwing it around, and they fight and they argue, and it's miserable. And I've had guys that stay in those relationships, and they're still in them right now. One guy comes right to mind. I sponsored the guy over 10 years ago. He's still in that marriage. They're still fighting. They still hate each other. What are you going to do? You know? So, I'm not in that marriage. And I'm not going to tell him anything about his marriage, because that's a big mistake. You know, and I've had all sorts of situations where the wife's getting violent with the guy. She's not even drunk. She's just crazy, and she's attacking him. He's sober in AA now, you know. And a lot of guys, another thing, oh, this is a great one. A lot of guys like to parade their sponsor in front of their wife. It's like, look, this is my sponsor. It's like, what? Okay. It's kind of awkward. It's like weird. The wife's just kind of glaring at you, you know. I hate that guy. I hate you. I hate you. So, you know, some bizarre thing. Guys will use you to try and show their wife that they're serious about staying sober this time. So those situations are very difficult. They really are. And, you know, so I don't know. I try. It says in here we stay out of people's marriages. I'm not a marriage guidance counsellor. I try not to give people advice. My advice really stops at this. I say, you know, if she comes at you, I want you to put your hands up like that, and I want you to say, I'm sorry that you're angry about this. I understand that I've not been a great husband, and I understand that I did a lot of terrible things when I was drinking to you and the family, and I'm sincerely sorry. I'm going to AA and I'm trying to do better. I really don't want to fight with you. I can't fight. I can't get angry like that anymore. And then just to go and take the dog for a walk and don't slam the door. And that doesn't really work. Because if he's like me, he can't resist, you know. Before I take the dog out, I'll get a jab in, you know. So I don't know. That's been my experience with this. If they're both willing to forgive and forget and move on in a spirit of love, I suppose, it works very well. If one or both of them won't do that, then they're in for a rough ride. So that's what I saw.
I've had this situation in my family, not so much, you know, with a marital deal. I haven't been married, so. But with my family, most of my family are alcoholic. All of them are sober that need to be sober, which is good. Those that aren't have just passed on. So, but everybody that's breathing today that needs to be sober is sober, which you think would be, it's a beautiful thing. We're lucky, but it does make things a little interesting, you know, when you get together. And early on in early sobriety, it was difficult. I did not understand any of the principle of living and letting live. I didn't, some cute words, but I don't really know what to do with those words. And I just was trying to sponsor my brother, just, you know, telling my mom she's doing it wrong, you know, and I'm just, it was a mess. And I was, you know, right at the top, I was causing all that difficulty. And it is not, this book says often words like, we've just begun, we've commenced. This is not an overnight matter, you know, and it refers to that a lot in the family afterward and throughout. And it's true. It has not been an overnight matter. And I, just really in the last couple years, a lot of those relationships with my family have got worse in sobriety, much worse before they got better. And just, you know, there's nothing worse than being odds for me with a family member. It just wears on me. That, you know, in a, just a solid resentment against somebody else. But those two things, they just really grind at me, and I cannot sleep. I wake up thinking about it. I go to bed thinking about it until there's, you know, until we clean it up, or I clean it up. So I've had to talk to my sponsor, talk to other people that have experience. I've had to learn three things that have helped me in all years of my sobriety. I've had to learn how to mind my own business, keep my mouth shut, and to leave it alone. Whatever it is that I am messing with, I need to leave it alone. And every time I have any kind of a uproar, conflict, or whatever it is, I have failed to practice one of those three things, hands down, in any area of my life. So, with guys that I've worked with, I sponsor a few guys that have been married or in and out of relationships, and a lot of times, you know, there's of course a lot of agitation that's going on the, you know, the romantic, you know, forefront of their life, you know, and they just have to take it. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, a lot of times they have, I mean, they are just coming into this knowledge that they have created this storm, you know, because everything that they're talking to me about, you know, complain about would never have been there had they had been, you know, sober and trying to behave in a spiritual life. So it's kind of a wake up a lot of time for the men that I've talked to about this, and they have to start practicing those three things in their life. I mean, there's just no way around it. Getting wrong is a tough process, but it is what's required if I'm going to live on this planet and breathe. It's also going to be required if I'm going to have any kind of a working relationship with anybody else on this planet. I've got to be able to be wrong about stuff. And I don't come in here understanding what that means, because I believe that I was correct all the time. I did not care what you thought. I thought everybody on this planet was pretty messed up except for myself. It's arrogant, ridiculous. I mean, I'm sitting on my front porch getting hammered, throwing beer cans in the street, thinking that's the correct action. I mean, for where I was living, it was probably about right, but, you know, moreover, it's not. So I don't come in here understanding how to be wrong, and it's been one of the greatest gifts to be able to admit when I'm wrong, because that's the freedom. It's when it just goes away. When I say, Graham, I was wrong, it's a showstopper. What's he going to do? I mean, he can kind of, I've had some people kind of keep coming at you, and you just keep telling them, I was wrong. You know, and maybe they got a little bit left in the tank, and they got to hammer you some more. You just keep telling them you're wrong, and you apologize. What can you do to make it right? But it's a game stopper. It's over when that happens. There really isn't anything else anybody can do. I mean, it's good for me. I get to find out what I can do. But more importantly, it lets them know that, hey, you know, there's a good chance that it's a good chance it's not going to happen again. You know, it may. It's happened. I've had repeated behavior with my family to the point where my sponsor's like, don't even go back and make, what are you going to do? Keep making amends for acting like a jerk all the time? I mean, it's the same amends, Eric, over and over again. You know, what we need to do is to behave differently. And sometimes, like you're talking about, the bait is just too good. You know, and I didn't sit down and be quiet. Maybe I didn't have any 11-step mourning at all. Maybe I just did not sit down and get quiet before my day started. And I don't have anything in the patience tank. The patience tank is empty. And so when some kind of a situation comes up that threatens whatever it is I want, I'm just flying off the handle. And that's my fault. It's always my fault. You know, I'm responsible for behaving the way you're supposed to behave, regardless of what other people do. It's a tough pill to swallow. But they're really, what are the other options? You know, I've already exhausted all the other options. Being short with people, rude, dominating, manipulative, whatever it might be, and that stuff has not worked. Thanks.
Okay. All right, so we are on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
Yeah, so I think this is emphasizing for me that I need to be connected to other people in AA, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor some other guys, and I'm close to those guys. I talk to them a lot. I talk to my sponsor a lot. I meet my sponsor face to face regularly, and I try to meet the guys that I sponsor face to face regularly and sit down across the table from them. And you know, it's interesting, before the meeting I was talking to Eric about some situations and some big deals in my life, and you know, I always have this view that things are going to go a certain way and that I'm going to feel a certain way, and that other feelings are bad. Like, for example, one that is really bad is resentment. You know, resentment's a terrible thing. I shouldn't have any resentment. If I have resentment, I have to get rid of it as quickly as possible. Another one would be fear. You know, fear's bad. If I have any fear, I need to get the big man in to get rid of it as quick as he can. Come on, I'm afraid, take it away. Okay, we're good. So I can get back to thinking about me. But that's not really been my experience at all. My experience of, you know, being sober is that actually sometimes I've got really, really resentful about things and actually acted badly as a basis of that resentment. But when I stand back, and it was very painful. And the situation I'm talking about, I had a kid. The kid was sick. The doctors weren't doing a good job. I lost my temper. I called the doctor a certain phrase that you shouldn't say to a doctor. They don't like it when you say that to them. And the upshot of it was I was very resentful. We got kicked out of the practice. They dropped my son as a patient because of my behaviour. But that anger and that resentment spurred me to try to seek some alternatives, which resulted in us taking him to Johns Hopkins, and they cured my son's epilepsy. So when I stand back, and I was able to go back and make amends to the appropriate people, but when I stand back and look years later, and I've got a guy that I sponsor, or me myself, I'm going through the storm, because the storm's coming. Drunk or sober, the storm's coming. Okay, I don't care who you are, you're not going to get through this without some storm. It's coming. So the question is, what do I do in the storm? And when that storm hits, it's very easy for me the first few times to think, oh, this is terrible, I'm not doing it right, I'm not properly sober, I'm not spiritually fit, and I'm in so much pain. And you know what? See, when I'm in the pain, that's the spiritual awakening coming. That's God coming into my life and moving stuff around. That's God changing me. And see, when I come out of the storm, I find that bits of me that I didn't like, or sometimes bits of me that I liked, they've just gone. I didn't work on it. I'm going to work on being nice. I'm going to work on not being rigid in AA or whatever. It just disappeared. So I need to remember that when I'm in that, when I'm in that pain and I'm in the storm and I'm in the chaos and I'm in the confusion, and all I want is to know what's going to happen, and I don't know, because life's not like that. When I'm in there, I need to remember this is actually good. The fact that I'm burning with resentment and terrified, that those are good things, because that shows me that this is working. And if I work the program on it, and just don't take the first drink no matter what happens, and do these things, I get through the other side and I've been changed and I have a new understanding. And perhaps the thing that I understand best of all is that it really increases my ability to be useful to other people, because they're going to go through their storm too. And how wonderful is it when the guy's going through the storm, and I can walk in there with him and say, it's okay, I've been in this storm before. It's really not that bad. Well, it is kind of bad, but you'll be all right. And that's what this is about, right?
It's good to know, Graham. Thank you. I like specifics. And we put ourselves in God's hands. I'm like, great. Sounds like a good idea. How exactly do I put myself in God's hands? I want to do that. How do you do that? That's always how I seem to read this book. It says something like that, you know, some kind of unattainable thing. But it is, you know. My sponsor helped me put myself in God's hands, you know. He showed me the things that he was doing. He told me to come here every day to get a group, to get a job, you know, to show up, to hang out with other alcoholics, to take the steps. All the things that we hear about in AA, all three sides of the triangle as it's talked about, that's how I put myself in God's hands. I don't sit back and, you know, I do sit back and close my eyes and get quiet once in a while, but I don't run off to a mountaintop somewhere for a week and hopefully I will tumble off into God's hands. I mean, I need to come roll up into AA meetings regularly and participate in what we do here. And that's my best description of how I can stay in the hands of God, really. I just can't come up with a plan like that for myself. So I wouldn't even know where to begin. Follow the dictates of a higher power. Sounds great. How do you do that? I'd like to follow the dictates of a higher power. My life would probably be a whole lot better. You know, I've been playing higher power all my life, and it looks terrible. You know, again, I mean, the only way to follow the dictates of some other power than Eric is to come here and follow the dictates of things that have worked for you all. You know, when you're talking to me, you see on any given day with any problem that's going on in my life, some, you know, just a real burner or just a real rattlesnake of a deal, right? Just burning you up. You have a better perspective on it than I do. You know, I was talking to Graham last week about my diabetic cat. It sounds kind of lame, right?
Sorry.
I'm like, he weighs like 300 pounds. You know, he's awesome. Freaking nature. Now I like, and Graham's got some legitimate things that are going on, right? Like with human beings in his life. People that require like actual help, you know. And Taco just needs a couple shots every day, and I'm just like, God, my life's over. You know, I can't. I'll never go surfing again. I can't. Blah blah blah. You know. But I get an accurate perspective of what's happening in my life. You know, silly or not so silly. You know, so I just need to make sure that I'm honest with people, and particularly my sponsor. Particularly when I goof up, I have to tell him myself, you know, when I do, I tell him myself regularly. I call Victor, I'm like, Victor, guess what happened? You know, and he will start laughing before I can even open my mouth. I feel very comfortable with my sponsor, and it's taken some time. You know, for a long time with every sponsor, I've had a couple sponsors, but there's like it's almost like a waiting period where I'm just more concerned about what they think of me before I can really start telling them all the dirty crap I've been doing, you know. So, and I've told him all the terrible things that I perceive to be awful. And so he just, you know, he's a gentle, helpful guy. He knows I will do whatever he tells me to do. It's funny. So he takes the reverse approach. He'll be like, well, this is what I'd do. You know, and I'm like, dead silence. I'm listening. What's Victor going to tell me? You know, but it's important. It's important that I listen to what any of you have to say about your experience. Because when you're talking to me about what's happened to you, it is very worthy information. It's very reliable. You know, it's always been very reliable. There's not any self-interest there for you. You know, you're compelled because you've had this experience, or maybe you've taken the steps. Maybe that's part of the spiritual experience. You know, for me, I was about 8 months sober, and somebody asked me to be their sponsor. I was like, holy crap, I got to get my life together. You know, this guy's going to, you know, everything's got to happen, man. So I don't know. I didn't want to help anybody when I got sober. I didn't want to read anything. I didn't want to hand out any of these stupid chips. I just want to kind of come to the meeting and go home. But I don't know. So over a period of time, that kind of wore off. So these specific, I like specifics. I like to know, you know, spiritual experience. Great. How do you do that? turn it over. God, I hate that. I hate that. I hate it so much. I'm like, I just want to question people. They're like, I'm just going to turn it over. Like, it's just like a little switch you can flick, you know, and maybe it is for some people. I've never found, I'm in the dark. I don't know where the damn switch is. I can't find it, you know. Fortunately, there are some very clear actions in AA that I can take that I don't even know if anything ever gets turned over. I think a lot of things just get plucked, you know, probably when I'm sick and tired of it enough. And maybe it's just because I'm following somebody else's direction on it. I don't really know the answer to all that just yet. So,
it's when you're in the storm.
But. Is it? Is that when it is? Okay.
Okay, we're moving on. we're moving on same page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We must think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with the spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory that he would escape the alcohol problem.
Yeah, so, you know, you can hide out in AA if you want. That's legitimate. You know, you can hide from life in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can go to more meetings a week than everybody else and brag about it and just spend your whole life in AA if that's what you want to do. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I did that for a few years at the start. But, you know, when I first got sober, I was in an Irish band and we used to play in bars and everybody, the other guys in the band drank. And, you know, I was able to go there. I didn't want to drink. I've known people in AA that were publicans. They owned bars and worked in bars every night. So I think the bottom line is it's for each person to decide their level of comfort. But, you know, my wife drinks socially. There's alcohol in the house. I don't want to drink. I'm not interested in drinking alcohol. I'm interested in not drinking alcohol. And I don't feel it as a pull on me. And I believe that's because I took the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been restored to sanity regarding the first drink of alcohol one day at a time. That's what's happened for me. So, you know, it's really up to each individual. I wouldn't suggest if you've not done the steps and you don't have a sponsor that you go and hang out at bars. But if that's what you need to do, have at it. It's not going to affect me. And that's really all I'm interested in a lot of the time. So, sorry, did I say that out loud? Anyway, on you go.
Over one, yeah.
You got a couple of minutes.
Okay. I played a band, and these guys were, I still play with, and they were having some whiskey the other night. And I've always been kind of eyeballing Andrew's whiskey because he's got like all these different types of whiskey, and they all pour like a little, like, yeah, we're going to have a little drink, whatever. And I started giving them a bunch of crap because they looked like they just poured, I don't know, I mean, just wasn't enough, clearly. He's like, yeah, Eric, this is plenty. You know, this is what normal people do. We don't have to go to a class to figure that out. I was like, God. I know, it was bad. And then he kind of backtracked. It was kind of funny. I laughed, which is a huge improvement for me because usually I'm like, I'm going to burn your house down. You know. So, anyway, I was working in a bar when I first got sober, and I worked in that bar for a couple years, and it's not to any greatness of me at all. I mean, it just is what it is. It's the only work I knew how to do. My sponsor gave me some directions when I got out of work. He's like, when you get off work, leave. Don't sit at the bar, and you know, don't do what you do. And so I did. And you know, at some point in my first year of sobriety, the obsession to drink left. You know, there were a lot of things I was doing differently. I mean, I was still working there, but I was going to a meeting every day. I was calling my sponsor. I was eating, showering, shaving, doing all these, you know, basic things you're supposed to do. And at some point, you know, it left. I've sponsored guys that have run back into that business and gotten drunk. I don't know the answer to that. I think it's just, and it's not just that. I think we all know what's going on inside of us. And if I'm being honest about what's happening inside of me with other people around me, I will be okay.
All right, well, that wraps up the second half of step 12 tonight. I would like to give our sub-tradition basket out. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be self-supporting to the climbing outside contributions. While contributions cover issues to many other sessions, the seventh tradition that holds at every level of AA service is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might arise from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. And the amount of your contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world.
I was going to say thank you so much, gentlemen, for being here tonight. Thank you.
At this time, are there any AA related announcements? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Ashley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ashley.
On Saturday, July 9th, 1:30 to 2 p.m., my home group downtown is sober.
Get some dinner.
We'll see the growth workshop. It's going to be a Mexican themed potluck, so bring a dish if you wish.
Awesome. Thank you, Ashley.
I'm Benson, I'm alcoholic. And the 23rd annual Wakefield Campfire Conference is going to be held on the 23rd to the 25th. I have a live push at this event, so you need to get rid of it.
Awesome, thank you. There's two gentlemen back there. Whichever one wants to go first?
My name is Andrew Rocco. On June 22nd, it's a Wednesday, and the Hunger Redskin is having their 36th annual celebration anniversary. Dinner at 6:30, going to be chicken, bring a dessert to South Korea, and we'll have the rest. And the speaker starts at 8, her name is Jesse. Thanks.
Awesome.
Jesse's a great plug, all
of
them. The last person there is in Charlottesville, Virginia, is the Whiskey Pub, Virginia State Conference, most people are not all soundless. The new year is looking for you, I believe it's the 25th. Annual thing for the University of Whiskey Pub. So great fellowship, great recovery if you want to know more.
All right, and as you guys, some of you may already know, since we're finishing up the 12 steps, that means next week is supper and speaker. So get excited and get hungry. Supper is at 6. Please bring a dish if you wish. We'll eat in here. And the speaker's at 7. And the speaker will be Buster from Summit. So invite your sponsees, invite your friends. It's still an open meeting. There's some green flyers. They're up on the table if you want to take one and pass it out to anyone you know. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining the home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Please raise your hands. And then newcomers, is there anyone here that's in their first 30 days who would like to introduce themselves by their first name? It's not too embarrassing. Yes, ma'am.
I'm Melissa,
and I'm alcoholic. Hi, Melissa. Welcome.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you so much, Melissa. We are glad you're here. There is literature available on this table. The only things that have an actual price associated with are the big books, and it's just sold at cost if you want to get one, see one of the home group members. And the sponsorship, we do encourage sponsorship very heavily. It's yours for the asking. Where you don't delay. If there's anyone here that's willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. So any of you guys who might need a sponsor, please see one of the people with their hands raised. And if you have questions, please see me after the meeting. I'll be happy to share some information with you about sponsorship. Reminder to smokers, please do not smoke in front of the doors. Move over to where the light posts are, where the butt cam is, so that way the other meetings that are getting out at the same time, they don't have to walk through all the smoke. And again, let's thank our panel for being here.
Thank you.
An extra special thanks to all you guys for coming. We really appreciate it. If you want to listen to the meeting online, go to simpleactions.net, and we'll go ahead and close the floor to her.
Oh, you guys are cool. Taco.
Who kept us sober today?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
All right, thank you so much for coming tonight.
It's great.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.